This is the sixth day of this January 2009 Rohatsu Sesshin. And today we'll take up a koan, this one from the Blue Cliff Record. And it's number 42. It's called Layman Pong's Beautiful Snowflakes. And the case goes, when Layman Pong took leave of Yaoshan, the latter asked 10 Zen students to escort him to the temple gate to bid him farewell. The layman, pointing to the falling snowflakes, said, "Beautiful snowflakes, they fall nowhere." Then one of the Zen students, named Zenkaku, asked, "Then where do they fall?" The layman slapped him. Zenkaku said, "Even a layman shouldn't be so crude." The layman said, "Though you call yourself a Zen student, old Yama won't let go of you." Zenkaku said, "What about you?" Again the layman slapped him and said, "You look but you are blind, you speak but you are mute." And then there's a comment by Secho, who said, "When Pong first spoke, I would have made a snowball and hit him with it." All right. I see from my records that it's been 12 years since I did a Teisho on this koan. So we have some virgin territory here in our source book of biographical information on the masters, Zen's Chinese Heritage by Andy Ferguson. We're reading here, his dates are 740 to 808. And he's the most famous lay Zen Buddhist in Chinese Zen history. The other one in China is Fu Daishi, and then the third of the big three in Zen history, the third illustrious enlightened lay person is Vimalakirti from India. He came from such and such province. He trained and gained realization under both of the great Zen, the great teachers of his era, Shido and Mazu. In another book, John Wu's The Golden Age of Zen, John Wu quotes an early Zen saying in China, Mazu and Shido divided the world between them. Mazu is probably a little more famous to us. He had 139 enlightened disciples. And the other one, Shido, is the author of our Harmony of Relative and Absolute. His Japanese name is Sekiso, or Sekito. I think the reason that Layman Pong is even more beloved and famous than Fu Daishi is that his wife and daughter were also experienced Zen practitioners, allegedly enlightened. And there were a lot of stories about this whole lay household's attainment of the way. There's a whole book just on the sayings of Layman Pong. So in 785, Lemanpong, that's the name that he later received. His original name was Pongyun. Let's call him Lemanpong. And he began study under this Shido. And we have described here his initial breakthrough. And then we have the translation of the original source material. In the year 785, Lemanpong met Zen Master Shido. He asked him, "Who is the one who is not a companion to the 10,000 dharmas?" The 10,000 dharmas just means the infinite things, phenomena of the universe. Another way of saying, what is beyond phenomena, all the phenomena imaginable. And Shito quickly covered Lemanpong's mouth with his hand. And at that, the layman had a realization. One day Shito asked, "What have you been doing each day since we last saw each other?" The layman said, "If you ask about daily affairs, then nothing can be said." And then he recited a verse, the last two lines of which are very widely known in Zen. "How miraculous and wondrous, hauling water and carrying firewood." This is the experience. This is the perspective of enlightenment. That even the simplest tasks, the most ordinary, everyday, routine tasks, become wondrous. There's no one hauling the water. There's no water being hauled. There's no hauling. And yet, there it is, hauling water. There's no one carrying the firewood. There's no firewood. There's no carrying, but there it is. Here it is. It's the pure action itself. The pure no action. When the mind is empty, when the mind is truly empty, everything becomes miraculous. This happening, this movement is, how can it be happening? There's no self, no object, no action. And yet we go about performing these miracles, all of us, every day, every hour. How miraculous and wondrous. Tapping at our keyboard, shoveling snow, diapering the baby, driving to work, back to his response when he was asked, what have you been doing each day since we last saw each other? If you ask about daily affairs, then nothing can be said. when we're absolutely one with what we're doing, it's not easy to later remember what we were doing. When I finish with a teisho, I can hardly remember anything I said. Doing something like this, you have to be one with it. It wouldn't do for me to be daydreaming here while people waited for me to get finished with my daydreaming. But notice this yourself. If in simple activities, when you're completely absorbed in them, you'll find that later on there's no, it's less likely to be any etching in the mind, any tracks of memory of what happened, because nothing happened and no one was doing it. Another time, Layman Pong attended a reading of the Diamond Sutra. When the speaker reached the phrase, "No self, no other," Layman Pong called out, "Speaker, if there is no self and no other, then who is lecturing and who's listening to it?" The speaker was dumbstruck. Layman Pong said, "I'm just a common person, but I'll offer you my crude understanding." The speaker said, "What is the layman's idea?" And Layman Pong answered with the following verse: "No self, no other, then how could there be intimate and estranged? I advise you to cease all your lectures. They can't compare with directly seeking truth. The diamond wisdom nature erases even a speck of dust. Thus I have heard, and thus I believe, are but so many words." Well, these are in quotation marks, these two phrases, "thus I have heard" and "thus I believe." The first one, at least, is how many sutras begin. And it would seem then from this that this speaker was lecturing on the Diamond Sutra. He was quite likely a monk. This was a common activity for monks who were not in the Zen school. I think mostly it was other schools of Buddhism where they would have public lectures and they would expound on the various sutras and other texts. Literally did this poor monk know who was in the audience. This first statement by the Layman Pong, "If there's no self and no other, then who is lecturing and who's listening to it?" It points to the fundamental experience in Buddhism, which is that of shunyata, of seeing the insubstantiality of all things, the no-thingness of things. And we'll get back to that when we return to our koan. Once Layman Pong asked his daughter, Ling Zhao, "Some ancient said, clear and brilliant are the meadow grasses. Clear and brilliant is the meaning of the ancestral teachers. How do you understand this?" Ling Zhao said, "So old and so great, yet you talk like this." Layman Pong said, You can see his eyes twinkling as he asked, "What would you say?" Ling Zhao said, "Clear and brilliant are the meadow grasses. Clear and brilliant is the meaning of the ancestral teachers." Layman Pong laughed. Now, this is the really most famous thing about Layman Pong. It says when he and his family attained the way, they are said to have taken all their possessions, put them in a boat, and sunk them in a river. The more common version is he took all his gold and sunk it in the river. He would have been delighted at the financial markets these days. And then when he was about to die, he said to his daughter, Ling Zhao, "Go look at the sun and see what time it is. Just when it's noon, come and tell me." Ling Zhao went to the door and looked out, saying, "The sun has just reached noon, but there's an eclipse." When Layman Pong went to the door and looked out, Ling Zhao went to her father's seat, placed her hands together, and passed away. Layman Pong smiled and said, "My daughter's deftness." Deftness, abilities, skill, talents. He then postponed his departure from the world by 7 days, presumably to follow the conventional funeral schedule. The governor of Jingzhou came to visit Layman Pong and asked about his illness. Layman Pong said to him, "I ask that you regard everything that is as empty, nor give substance to that which has none. Farewell. The world is like reflections and echoes." Then, placing his head on the governor's knee, Layman Pong passed away. His cremated remains were cast upon rivers and lakes. Monks and laity mourned him, saying that he was actually Vimalakirti. 300 of Layman Pong's poems were left to spread through the world. The other guy in the koan, Yaoshan, Japanese version is Yakusan. I see here that we read in Teisho about his dialogues and all in the recent October session, so I won't repeat them. Now back to the case, Layman Pong's beautiful snowflakes. I saw in another source that Layman Pong was with this master Yaoshan for 17 years at this point when he took leave of him. So it would not at all be unusual for the master, Yaoshan, to have a special group of students, monks. I don't know why they're not called monks here. Maybe they're not all monks, but we know the one is Zenkaku. So when Layman Pong took leave of Yaoshan, Yaoshan asked 10 Zen students to escort him to the temple gate to bid him farewell. I can't help but think of when I left Bukokuji. I'd been there just 3 months, and I was leaving the day after a 7-day sesshin, and Tangen Roshi insisted, as I was after saying goodbye to him, I was heading for the gate, and he insisted on waking everybody from their post-sesshin naps. I could have killed him. So everyone obediently came, their bloodshot eyes, and say goodbye to Bodhin. Tangen Roshi had a way of making everyone feel unworthy of his graciousness and his praise. So the layman Pong saw he had an opportunity here for a little Dharma dialogue. So he stood out there in the snow, and he pointed to them and said, "Beautiful snowflakes, they fall nowhere." This is the real nub of this koan, the real gist of it. What follows is just showing how a master like Layman Pong worked with students. But what about this statement, "they fall nowhere"? Back then to what in Buddhism we call the three wheels of subject, object, and action. The emptiness of the three wheels. And this is where we get into the most incomprehensible, the most radical and fundamental of the Buddhist experience. Again, the experience of seeing into the emptiness of all things. This kind of a statement, "they fall nowhere," completely flies in the face of what our senses are telling us. What do you mean they fall nowhere? I can see with my eyes, I see them falling down or to the side. When I was driving out here on Saturday evening before the opening ceremony, it was snowing heavily enough that when I had the brights on in my car, it had that weird effect where the snowflakes seemed to be coming straight into your headlights and coming, not falling, but blowing straight sideways. But our conventional view of things, what our senses tell us, is not the whole picture. For most of Buddhist history, until quite recently, there was no empirical evidence to support this teaching of emptiness. You would just have to rely on people having faith in these great masters and their experience, and until they confirmed it through their own experience. That from the very beginning there has never been a single thing. This is the meaning of a calligraphy that hangs in my quarters in Rochester, and the same place where it hung while Roshi Kaplow was living there. One of the most famous Zen sayings: from the very beginning, there has never been, not only there isn't, but there has never been a single thing. What is all this? Talking, listening, moving, coughing, the myriad activities. Who's doing these things? who or what? What is it? What is Mu? We are deceived by our senses. Our senses are amazing, amazing. We have such, they're so useful in so many ways, but they cannot reveal this emptiness of things. For that, we need instrumentation that was only developed relatively recently. So we move through our lives in this illusory life. It is, in a sense, like a dream. But really, it doesn't matter. That's what Wittgenstein said, the German philosopher. So call it a dream. What does it matter? Whether if we fall down on the ice and bruise ourselves, whether that's an illusory feeling of pain or not. There it is. So we conduct ourselves in a conventional way, even after having seen into the illusory nature of this phenomenal world. So, back to the emptiness of the three wheels. We could say there is fundamentally there are no snowflakes. There's nowhere they fall, and there's no falling. I have a statement from a magazine called The Sciences about this illusory nature of form, of especially of physical objects. And this is how it goes. Einstein's formula is E equals mc squared. Einstein's formula is even more significant than physicists have realized. It is actually a statement about how much energy is required to give the appearance of a certain amount of mass, rather than about the conversion of the fundamental thing, energy, into another fundamental thing, mass. And the layman might have added when he made this statement that because they fall nowhere, they're beautiful. And then one of escort of 10 Zen practitioners named Zenkaku asked, "Then where do they fall?" not a unreasonable question, but this is not in the realm of reason. This is far, far more vast than what can be encompassed in our mind of reason and rationale. The layman slapped him. That's one of the points of the koan to be demonstrated in Doksan. What did that slap indicate? If you think it means, oh, shut up, then you don't get the slap. You know, hitting and slapping is much, was and maybe still is, yeah, it still is from my experience in Japan. It was and is much more acceptable generally in China and Japan than it would be here. It's crops up so often in the koans and the stories and stories, and it's hard for us as Westerners to understand it in the way that those monks and masters understood it. It's never seen as just punitive. It's much more in the direction of a demonstration that the master cares. And is cares enough to want to help the student. So the layman slapped him. Senkaku said, even a layman shouldn't be so crude. Andy Ferguson's translation of this is, even a layman shouldn't act so rudely. So, no doubt the Zenkaku was a monk. And one of the memorable things about this koan, why it's so famous in Zen, is it shows the tables turned, where instead of the superiority of the monk over the layperson, layman Pong, is acting freely here toward a monk. But the monk doesn't go for this. Laymen aren't supposed to strike monks in his mind. Even a layman, you know, even a ignorant layman should know enough not to hit a monk, missing the whole significance of the layman slapping him. And to that, the layman says, though you call yourself a Zen student, old Yama won't let go of you. Yama is nickname for Yamaraja, the Lord of the Dead. According to Buddhist mythology, when we die, we go before this Yamaraja, and who, according to one version, he holds up a mirror where you have reflected back to you all of your karma of your life and previous lives. And then you consign yourself to your next life or your next destination. Just that. You don't do it yourself. He doesn't do it. You don't do it. It just happens. Actually, it's a nifty kind of a popular rendition of the doctrine, the teaching of karma. In karma, there is no God who sends us to heaven or hell. There is no agency. Remember, that's the first wheel, the emptiness of the first wheel. There's no entity who could do such a thing, but rather it's through, it is our actions, and that always means our actions, words, and thoughts that have an effect and create the momentum for our moving on into this or that realm. The other version is that Yamaraja has a book, very very large book, with the records of everything anyone has ever said, done, and thought. There's a lot in Buddhism that we don't hear much about here in Zen that has this popular appeal. It's more concrete. You know, try to tell an uneducated, illiterate person in China about the doctrine of karma. I mean, it's so sophisticated and difficult to understand, even for us, much less someone uneducated. And so instead, they have these images, these mythological images of someone like Yamaraja. According to one source I read, Yamaraja sends us sickness, old age, and approaching death as messengers to keep us from immorality and frivolousness. That's an exact quote. So though you call yourself a Zen student, old Yama won't let go of you. Well, had the Zenkaku been more developed as a Zen student, how might he have responded to that slap? Instead, what we get is this very common, conventional kind of getting miffed and saying what he did to the layman. And then again, Zenkaku says, what about you? Still miffed. Again, the layman slapped him and said, you look, but you are blind. You speak, but you are mute. And then this final comment by Shuedo, known in Japan as Secho, whose comments are peppered through the Blue Cliff Record. He says, when Pong first spoke, I would have made a snowball and hit him with it. This is so much the Zen style of this irreverence and this sweeping away what has been presented and turning it upside down. And then I have here the verse. These koans in the Blue Cliff Record have little elements to them that we don't work on in Doksan. There's an introductory verse, and then what's called a pointer, and then there's Secho's verse. This one is so good that I want to read it. This is Secho's verse to this koan. Hit him with a snowball. Hit him with a ball. Even the best will fail to reply. Neither heaven nor earth knows what to do. Eyes and ears are blocked with snow. Even the blue-eyed monk can't explain. The blue-eyed monk refers to Bodhidharma. What does he mean? Even Bodhidharma can't explain. eyes and ears blocked with snow. There's something so wonderful about a heavy snowstorm. It creates plenty of problems, but there is this something magical that happens with people, meeting with one another, interacting with one another. We've all seen this, anyone in this kind of a climate, how during a heavy snowstorm, people more readily get out and help one another. They more readily talk with one another, with strangers. Why is that? What is it about the deep silence of snow that makes people reach out? It's like our discriminating mind is blocked with snow at such times. We don't so easily see strangers as other. We're all in this together. We're all humbled by the majesty of this vast system that has dumped this pure white substance and brought a hush to our world. There's a wonderful poem that Roshi Kaplow shared with me when I was working on this koan. It's by Wallace Stevens, an American or North American poet who died in 1955. It's called The Snowman. One must have a mind of winter to regard the frost and the boughs of the pine trees crusted with snow, and have been cold a long time to behold the junipers shagged with ice, the spruces rough in the distant glitter of the January sun, and not to think of any misery in the sound of the wind, in the sound of a few leaves, which is the sound of the land full of the same wind that is blowing in the same bare place. For the listener who listens in the snow and, nothing himself, beholds nothing that is not there and the nothing that is. Stop now and recite the four vows.